And all I remember is I remember feeling the sun on my back. We turned around and the sun is coming out of the clouds. As soon as I lifted it up, we all start sobbing because my dad's nickname was Sunshine Johnny. So just the fact that that happened, like in that moment in time, like the pictures of me lifting up my dress were all just hysterically crying, just because it was kind of just like an awe moment of knowing that he's here.
You'll hear from women, leaders, and mothers. We're holding hands as we move through life's greatest transitions. Join us for The Rising.
Hey guys, welcome back to The Rising Podcast. Today I'm talking to Julie. She is a friend of mine. You are going to absolutely love this conversation because it is pure storytelling. So Julie's going to tell us about the two weddings that she had. She's just coming up on her first anniversary with her husband, Alex. We're going to talk through some stories of her teaching as a kindergarten teacher. Of course, adorable. And she's going to let the parents that are listening know what she really thinks is important for your kids to be working on, especially as kindergartners. I think you may be surprised. Julie's also going to share with us some really special memories of her father, who she lost last year. I know this episode is really going to touch your hearts, as it did mine.
So we got married twice.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Tell me about this, because I saw pictures and then I saw more pictures. I was like, wait, I'm confused.
So we were planning to have our wedding in June. We planned that since when we got engaged the year before. Yeah, April 2018, we got engaged. Yeah. So we planned for June. Everything was fine up until like January of 2019 when we found out my dad's cancer came back. Mm-hmm. So he had skin cancer when I was younger, and then he now had bone metastasis. Mm-hmm. So it's bone cancer, and that's like the worst kind. So we found out it was like the first weekend of January, it was right after Christmas. He told us that he went to Tampa, because that's where he went to Moffitt when he had his other cancer. So he found out that his cancer came back. And it was worse because he had lung cancer. So that's why he was there in the beginning. He had skin cancer here and he got it treated here. And then he ended up getting lung cancer. And then he went to Moffitt for that. And because of the lung cancer, it went away, but then it came back as bone metastasis. Wow. So we found that out in January and we were both like, what do we do kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So like we kind of played it by ear. And then February came up and it got worse. He started not walking as good. He had a really hard time like breathing. He was just really struggling. And so we decided it was the second to last week of February. We were like, we need to have a wedding. Mm-hmm. So we planned our wedding. So seven or six days later, we got married.
Wow.
So we planned a wedding within a week.
Wow.
And like everything kind of like pulled together. Like we did it in my parents' backyard. So I got to have like the first look with my dad in the house. Like it wasn't like normal weddings would do it, you know, where the father and the daughter like walk up to each other and they see each other. Like my dad was sitting on the couch because he couldn't really stand. Yeah. But I still got to do that first look with him in my real dress.
Mm-hmm.
And then I changed before we did the ceremony into this other dress I got from Macy's, prom dress, but still it worked.
Nice.
So we did that. So that was March 2nd. And then we ended up getting married again June 2nd on our real date that we were planning.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, so we're official though in March. That's what our license says.
Oh, that's awesome. We talked about doing that. We we didn't, but it's like after we got engaged, I felt like every weekend we'd be like, let's just go get married. Like, we're going to do it anyway. Why don't we just go do it? But, oh, that's amazing. What did that mean to your dad? Was he excited to be a part of it?
It was so special for him because, I mean, whenever I was like a little girl, he would always, I mean, I was, okay, this might not sound really bad, but I was a chunky girl. I was not thin. And he was born and raised in Brooklyn, like straight up, like he'll just tell you straight up what he wants to say. He doesn't care what you think.
Yeah.
So as younger, he was like, you're never going to get married. You're too big, blah, blah, blah. And just like, he never tried to hurt my feelings, but it was just the way how he was, because that's how he was raised, to just like tell it how it is and don't care what everyone else says.
Yeah.
But whenever Alex and I got together and he was like, I really hope you wife her up and I hope you guys get together and blah, blah, blah. So actually before we got engaged, Alex went to my parents' house and asked them for my hand in marriage. So I told him that you have to ask them.
Yeah.
And so he actually went over there and my dad, excuse my language, but he said, when the fuck are you going to marry my daughter? And he said, actually, I'm here to ask you guys if I can marry her because I want to propose to her when we go to New Orleans or whatever. And my mom was like, yes, oh my God, thank God. Like, they were both freaking out for my dad. He always wanted to be there for when I got married. And so whenever he heard that from him, after I told him that the engagement happened, he was like, I'm just glad you're taken care of. He's like, I just want to be able to leave this world knowing that you are safe and that you are in someone else's hands because you're not going to be in mine, you know? So he didn't want us to do the wedding at first because he said he didn't want to like jeopardize our plans and he didn't want us to reschedule things. And he's like, you're doing this for me. And I said, yes, we are doing it for you, but we're also doing it for us. Mm-hmm. I could not imagine my wedding day without you there. You know, he was my best friend. He was my comforter. He was everything to me. Like, I feel like there's something special in a father-daughter relationship. I don't know about you, but I mean, my mom and I used to bicker all the time. My dad and I would too, but my dad and I would somehow like find our connection faster. I don't know if it's because of the different like relationship we had, mm-hmm. but yeah, so him being there meant the world to him. Like the pictures that we have, he's crying in them, but like you can also tell that he's in a lot of pain from that. So it was a mixture, like seeing him there was a mixture of just like being happy that we're doing it, but also I was just feeling kind of guilty, you know, like why would I make him do this? But at the end of the day, you know, like I remember after the wedding, like we didn't get to do our father-daughter dance because he just couldn't dance.
Yeah.
So after, like I danced with my cousin, who's the closest thing I have to a brother.
Mm-hmm.
So after that dance, I ended up going inside and my dad was in his bedroom and his bedroom window looks outside to the backyard where all of our stuff was set up. So the tent, the food, all the chairs, tape, everything. And, we kind of like had a moment together and he was like, I'm so thankful that you did this today. It was a pain in the butt to get here. You know, I thought that it wasn't going to be worth it. And I thought that it was just going to be hard on everybody, you know, because everyone had to bring the food and like everyone took part. Yeah. And it came together so seamlessly. I felt like it was easier to plan that wedding than our wedding in June, you know, but he was just so thankful and grateful that we were able to do that. And he just is like, he's like, now I know that when I go, you're fine. You'll be taken care of.
Yeah.
So it meant like everything to him to be his only daughter.
Yeah.
To be handed off, you know, in front of him. So
it's so nice too to have them so excited about your husband. And
yeah.
So happy that it was him. And yeah, I love that they're like more ready for the engagement than you guys were. Like, when do you think he's going to show up and do this?
I know. He was just ready. And he kept telling me, because I told him, because we moved in before we got engaged.
Mm-hmm.
But I told him, I was like, I did not want to put my name on the rent or anything like that. I want to be safe. So if anything happens, I can like just scoop my way out and not have any record. And my dad was like, that's the best way to go, because what if something happens and then you're done for and then your credit goes down and blah, blah, blah. Like I've told you before, like the other day, like he's prepared for whatever it is. So he was like not for it in the beginning, but then he just, and like their relationship got really strong within the 3 years we were together beforehand. And he really loved Alex for sure. Yeah.
So your first wedding was March, you said.
Yeah.
And then when did you lose your dad?
March 21st.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was that month. So very fast. So if we would have even like waited, you know, a couple of weeks, we don't know how it would have played out, you know. But he, it's funny because so the wedding was March 2nd, and then so the 20th, that's like night, so it's about 2.5 weeks. So about a week and a half later, I was babysitting and I got a phone call while I was babysitting that went from my mom that said, your dad's in hospice. So it had, it went, like, he got really bad after the wedding, like, worse than we thought. So after that, I, like, ran off to hospice, and within a week, he was gone.
Wow.
Yeah. So we were just very thankful that everything played out how it did, you know. I know that some people, like, they go through this, and they don't even have the time to plan something beforehand to have whoever is about to be lost there, you know. So I'm just very grateful that we were blessed to have a wedding with him.
That's amazing. And what, I can't even imagine, what were the emotions like then, like grieving the loss of your father, celebrating his life, moving on to celebrate your marriage? That's like, it's just a lot in a very short amount of time.
I'm just an emotional person in general. I cry over every sad movie. I just cry out of nowhere. If someone texts me something sad, I start crying. I'm just like that. But the way how it went, it was like, so we had the wedding in March, and then my dad passed. And then we had my bridal shower. Mm. So like during that, it was very emotional, you know. That was the first time of seeing people after my dad passed. Mm-hmm. So of course they're saying like, we're sorry for your loss, but they don't mean to do it, but you know, it just comes up.
Yeah.
And then right after that was my bachelorette party. Mm-hmm. And that was emotional because I fractured my foot on my bachelorette party. That was the day before we left. So I was just like crying that night, saying, like, I was just like, God, why is this happening? Like, you took my father. Now I have a boot on me. I'm not going to be able to take this off for the wedding. Like, I just felt like at every angle I was getting hurt by something. So just my emotions were everywhere. And I was crying almost every week just because I didn't know not how to let them out, but just how to deal with them during that time. And I just, like, I was just mad at everything in general, you know? And so then after that, like, then our wedding came, and that was just an emotional day in general, you know, just knowing that the day was here, more people were here, all the time and tasks we did to come up with this one day thing means the world to me, but the one person who means more wasn't able to be there.
Yeah.
You know, so that day was just, that was probably the most emotional day, was my wedding day, you know. And our friends and family also didn't know we got married in March. Mm-hmm. We kept that a secret. The only people that knew were like my bridesmaids and his groomsmen and our family, like our immediate family.
Yeah.
And after we got married, they did like the announcements for the our court, whatever it's called, the people in the wedding, the bridal party, to come in. And after all of them were done, our DJ played the video that our videographer made from our wedding in March. And so no one knew it was coming, you know. The only people that knew were us. Mm-hmm. And Alex didn't even see the video. He saw part of it, but not all of it, because there was the part of me in my dress.
Yeah,
with
right.
My dad. So I would turn the camera for that part and he would hear it. But that was his first time of seeing everything with like my dad's emotions and him talking to me. Like there's something, like a part of it, he says like, you found the right guy, you know? He just says that flat out loud. He's like, he's the right guy for you. Like you found him and like, I'm so, and like, you're the best daughter, like just all this stuff. So everyone in the room is crying. There's not a dry eye, you know, we're all sobbing. Yeah. And of course I'm sobbing because everyone else is sobbing and I'm just watching them just like thinking, not why is he not here, but I just wish he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so just all that together was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And then even with that, like, so because I didn't have my father to be there for my dance, I had my cousins and my uncles dance with me on my dad's side.
Yeah.
So like first I had my cousin who walked me down the aisle, and then, you know, when my other cousins jumped in, who was one of his really good friends, you know, they ended up working together, and then my other cousin and my uncle, my dad's brother, and then my mom jumped in at the end, and it was I Can Only Imagine by Mercy Me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, but it's about him losing his father, and that's who the song was for his dad, so it meant a lot for that song and for all of them to be there. And the emotions were definitely running high that day, just everything, you know, and everyone, I mean, we all wanted him there, but I had like a special seat for him that said daddy on it. We had his picture with me in it. And I had a heart cut in the shape, or a heart shaped of my dad's shirt sewn into my dress.
Mm.
And that was the shirt he wore in March that I had sewn in. So there's like little things that we did to like keep him around us. I had his picture wrapped around my bouquet.
Oh.
Little stuff like that to just have him be close and near. And what was even like crazier was that, so we were doing the pictures before we walked down the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
And my photographer said, let's go outside and take some pictures of you and your mom. So we go outside and she's like, I really want to get a picture of your dress, you know, the part on the bottom. So it was very cloudy at this point, you know, like when we drove back from the hotel to the venue, we thought it was going to rain. And that didn't so much for me. I was freaking out, you know, because it's outside.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm outside and I lift up the dress. And all I remember is I remember feeling the sun on my back. And we turned around and the sun is coming out of the clouds. As soon as I lifted it up, we all start sobbing because my dad's nickname was Sunshine Johnny. So just the fact that that happened, like in that moment in time, like the pictures of me lifting up my dress were all just hysterically crying, just because it was kind of just like an awe moment of knowing that he's here.
Yeah.
You know? Even though he's not here physically, he's here spiritually. And I know that's what really matters.
That's so beautiful.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm right there with you. Oh, man. So I think, and I don't know like a ton about your relationship with your closest girlfriends, but I know them all separately. You're surrounded by amazing people. Yeah. I do know. And I want to know, because I know you recently got a tattoo with your two best girls. So I just want to know like what that meant to you to have that kind of support without having siblings, to kind of have built this family around you.
Yeah, well, we've, my two closest friends and I, we've been friends since we were in first grade and second grade. It's one of those friendships that I'm always like super grateful for, just because it's lasted for so long, like even through seasons where, you know, all friends have their arguments or their disagreements, but they end up like, if it's a true friendship, you find your way back to each other. That's us, you know, like we've all had different issues in the past. But what really matters is us sticking together. You know, I think it kind of fostered from when we were younger, just because For example, one friend I've had since first grade, and her mom and my mom are close. And then the other one, we've been with in second grade, and her mom and my mom were like best friends. They would come over for dinner, we'd have sleepovers, I'd go to their house, we'd like trade off car pickup, you know, just different stuff like that. So growing up with that, I think definitely helped. Because as you grow older, you meet people who you're friends with, but they're not your true closest friends that you can say, like, these girls are your sisters, or these guys are your brother, whoever they are.
Yeah.
So with that, like, we all went through so much together. One of my friend's moms passed away when we were younger, and we went through that season together. And then, you know, now with my dad, they were really close to my dad. We all used to go on family vacations. Like, I remember specific times, like when I went to the Keys, you know, we spent a whole week there with my parents. So she was just like a sister. And like the other one, we went to Disney together. It was just a cool bond to have when you don't have siblings, to know that these people are around consistently, and you know that, like, deep in your heart.
Yeah.
So having them both as my matrons of honor too, I could not pick one, I had to have two, was very special.
Yeah.
And our tattoo, so we would joke about it years ago and never really like did anything for it. I know my dad hated tattoos. I have one on my back. And so when I turned 18 and I got it, he was pissed. My other two are white and he didn't know I had them. They're both on my wrist. So I kind of kept those a secret from him. But we wanted, they were just saying one day, we should get something to match. And I'm just like, all right, this means we're inseparable, you know, like when we go off and like, we can't not be friends. Because like,
we commit a crime, people will know.
Yeah. It's like going to jail.
They'll link us together.
So we all picked, so it's like the sun with waves. And not only does it represent like how we always go to the beach together, but because my dad, he had such an important impact, not only in my life, but in theirs. You know, like my friend was saying the other day, she used to come over the house and just like, he would give us advice on stocks and money and just everything. But like, now we think down the road that we're, you know, older and now more mature adults, like we were grateful for that. Even though it might've been boring when we were 17, you know, it was useful for now that we're married and, you know, it's real life stuff that we actually have to deal with.
Yeah.
Rather than then. So.
Oh man.
Yeah, it's a.
Where in your life, just any place, do you feel closest to your dad now? Like, if you want to just go be with him, talk to him, where do you usually find yourself?
I don't like sometimes. So, ever since he passed, there's been like incidences where I feel like he's around when like in the morning time, we have actually like a cardinal that comes outside. Mm-hmm. And it's always on like our telephone pole. And one morning, I just remember after he passed, I just, actually it was the night before, I was like sobbing, crying, just like, you know, sometimes you just get in a rut and you don't know what to do. Like with my husband working, I'm home by myself most of the time. I was just sobbing one night and I just did not have a good night at all. I was very depressed, anxious, just everything. And the next morning I woke up and I just heard this bird and I'm like, what kind of bird is this like loudly yelling, you know, or like singing? I go outside and I'm looking and I'm trying to find one and I see this red cardinal on our telephone pole.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Alex to come outside and he did. And he's like, are you sure that's the cardinal? And I said, yeah. Do you see its stomach moving? And it's like, and he said, cardinals usually don't sing.
Hmm.
And I didn't know that. We looked it up. I guess they don't do it like as often as normal birds do.
Wow.
But this cardinal has come outside in the morning time almost every morning. Sometimes it's not, but it's weird because every time I have like a really bad night or something, that cardinal is there the next day.
Hmm.
So I feel like that, like one time I just stood outside for 20 minutes, like listening to this bird, because I firmly thought that this is just like my dad trying to say hi, you know, just knowing that I'm here. You know, I believe that, I don't know, we have like little signs from God that just tell us like someone's looking down on you, and that was one. So that's usually when I like feel super close, is when that happens, just because I feel like it's not often that does it anymore, and just specific times now. I don't know. I feel like I'm talking gibberish, but I have a journal too that I started writing in right before he started passing. Alex actually said, have you ever thought about writing out your thoughts? Because out of nowhere, I just start freaking out and my anxiety would run high and I just start bawling. He said, have you ever thought about just putting it to paper? And so I said, no, I don't really write. I just never really liked to write. Like even in college, I hated writing papers. And so he was just like, just try. But I found a journal that I had that was blank. And I just started writing in it. And when that happens too, I feel like I'm able to talk as if he's in front of me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's really powerful. I feel the same way about writing. I've been writing for ever, since I started high school. And there's something, even just getting it out, like having a conversation is really therapeutic, but there's a lot of those thoughts, right? Like, especially through the waves of grief that are just not for anyone.
Yeah.
Like just for you, or even those conversations that might just be for you and your dad. It's like, no one else is going to get this the right way or understand exactly what I mean. And
And that was the hardest time too, is that just like knowing, I got my hair done today. I was actually telling my hairstylist about this, like how when you go through something like tragic for your life, if you lost a husband, a father, a mother, whoever, your stages of grief are going to be completely different than someone else.
Yeah.
You know, there's no rhyme or reason. It's just how you are. You know, some people, like when Alex gets mad, he likes to hold it in and he doesn't like to really talk about it until he's wrapped his mind around it. And then he's able to talk. Could be an hour, 2 hours, 30 minutes, however long. Mm-hmm. Me, on the other hand, I just like to know what's going on right now. I just start crying. I just start saying like, what's wrong? You know, what's going on? And that's how I was with grief. Like with my dad passing, all I could do was cry and ask why. Mm. Why is he gone? Why did this happen now? Why couldn't it have happened years from now? What made his cancer come back? Mm-hmm. Just what could I have done to not make this happen? You know? All these things just keep spinning and spinning and spinning. But if you have to learn to just stop focusing on that, because I'm never going to get those answers.
Yeah.
I just have to know that grieving is okay. I can cry. I can be upset, but I also need to learn how to get over it. Not get over it, but I need to learn how to cope with it and know that there will always be a hole there. That hole will never be replaced. Mm-hmm. It's just learning how to live with it is the key.
It is. I mean, grief is such a hard emotion because there, like you said, there's no fix. And I think that is where we go as humans, is like, okay, we have this problem. So how am I going to solve it? I'm going to use these tools or this system and I'm going to fix the problem. And I think I've even said this in another podcast interview, but I love the quote that grief is love with nowhere to land. So it's like, it feels really heavy and it's like this bad thing sometimes, but what it is this overwhelming love that we don't have a place for.
Yeah.
And that just kind of comes flowing out of us all so differently.
Yeah.
And it's just not linear either. And that's kind of with a problem. You're like, okay, step by step, eventually we're going to climb out of this and be okay. And you know, you can sometimes feel there are just completely normal days, and the very next day or moment, you've kind of gone into a tailspin again. And so you are your parents' only baby.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pride and joy.
And you were talking about being an only child. And I want to know, because I feel like I'm the farthest thing from an only child, just about what you think, really, like the benefits growing up, just being the only child with your parents. How did you feel like your relationship, was different?
As a kid, I mean, my parents were also older. So I was born when my mom was 45. So she was a lot older. They actually got married when she was 19, he was 24.
Oh, wow.
They tried having a baby. They had a miscarriage. My middle name was Grace because of that, because they called me a Grace from God. So I was the one and only munchkin in the Keckney family. But growing up as an only child, I just remember living at our big house in New Jersey when you're younger, and I would just play with my toys by myself. And then we moved to Florida. My grandma moved here. So then we followed. That was my dad's mom. But being here, they put me into school right away, which I thought was a huge benefit as an only child, because you have no one to play with at your house. Like, you learn how to be imaginative and use your toys and just find things to do on your own. But also you need to learn how to socialize, and you can't do that unless you have people around you, which is like the huge difference between people who have siblings and not. Mm-hmm. The ones who do are used to that. They already know that before they step into preschool or whatever grade they're going into, compared to only children who don't go through that as early unless their parent takes initiative and takes them into school. So like, I went to preschool when I was younger, and my parents say because of that, like, I was able to communicate very well. But living at home, I mean, I didn't have to share, so that was cool. But I've never been like a problem share either. Like, when friends came over, I always wanted to help and always wanted to do things. So I always just said, you can have this. Like, they even said, like, when I was younger, I always wanted to just give my stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't care if I needed it right away. I'd rather have someone else play with my toy first than me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool whenever they said that about me. But the sharing thing, I mean, all the attention's on you too. Like, my dad used to work it when I was a kid. My mom didn't work as much. She did work, but he was more the full-time like bread maker. So she was home with me, and you know, she would give me attention that I need because she was working at home.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to my dad, when my dad came home, I just wanted his attention because I never saw him.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. And then just learning, you know, how to cooperate with others and knowing that your opinion is not the only one that matters. I used to think I was right all the time. My dad always said, you would have been a great lawyer.
Yeah.
Because it was my way or the highway. Nothing else mattered. I was like, you know, like when you turn 16 and you think that you know everything. That was like me at the age of 6. I thought I knew everything because no one else told me differently. You
right.
know, anyone tell me, no, you're not right. Yes, you are. You know, like the bickering, that never happened. I always thought I was like the queen of the household.
You know?
But I also never had like, not the bitterness, but just like the stubbornness of me wanting to get my way all the time. Like I said, I just always wanted to like do the right thing and help. You know, if my mom said, do this, I would drop up a hat and say, okay.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to make her happy. You know, there was no one else to do that for besides my parents.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be like their little shining star.
It's so interesting because I'm the oldest of 4. And while you're talking, I'm almost like seeing characteristics in you that remind me of the oldest, the youngest, the middle. It's like you almost are more fully developed with like all these different things because you're not being compared to other children. Like, you say it was your way or the highway. Well, it was mine too, because I'm the oldest. But like, if you ask my siblings, they would be like, yeah, we had no choice in what happened, probably. But then like the wanting to like be close with your parents and please your parents, I see more as like the middle. I mean, this is not for everybody, but yeah, I feel like you get a little bit of both. And then did you feel like does Alex have siblings?
He's one of 4.
Okay.
And he was the youngest of the 4.
Did you feel then excited knowing, like when you first met and found out he had a big family, was that exciting to you or intimidating?
It was both. I mean, knowing that he had brothers and sisters, I mean, because I knew as a kid, I would never have aunts and uncles on my side for my kids.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have like, not fake ones, but like our friends who, you know, would call them aunt or uncle or whoever, but I would never have real relative ones. So that was cool knowing that. But then like once I stepped in, it was very intimidating because I'm like with, let's just for example, like with food, we talked about this the other day, how I know what I want and I'll just grab it from my fridge and I'll take it and I'll eat it. My other friend's house is an only child. We have refrigerator rights. I take whatever I want. She comes to my house, same thing. And then what's on my plate is my plate. But then like learning that they just take things from other people, you know, they don't really mind sharing, but I'm like, that's my food. That's my chicken nugget. I don't want to share. I had 8 for a reason. Get your own box of chicken nuggets, you know, like that's mine. Back up. So with that and just knowing how siblings react too and how they just connect with each other, how they have their arguments, how they get along, it was very eye-opening for me, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, and it's so, I do feel really lucky because I'm close to all of my siblings, but I know that, I mean, a lot of times you said, like how your friends would be aunts and uncles if you have children. But I mean, I think there's something so powerful in that because some people are not close with their siblings. And that I think just the fact that people are like a blood relative, it doesn't always mean that you'll have that support and even that you'll end up being people who like each other. I think it's a hard thing because my siblings and I, we have a lot of similarities and we have a lot of differences. And like if I, you know my brother, if I met my brother out on the street, like I don't think I would be like, oh, this guy's gonna be my bestie. He's, you know, he'd probably think I was super silly and I would think he was like too serious. But it's nice to be able to build those friendships that turn into family because that's, I mean, that's, if not just as good, better, because you've like chosen them, you've made that effort to work on the relationship and yeah, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, even like one of my best friends, she has a daughter and she calls me Aunt Juju. And whenever like she just sees me, she like lights up. And she just like screams my name, runs to me. She's such a bubbly kid, but like just to know that you're not my blood, but yet you think I'm your blood. And I mean, our relationship is so strong as just our connect, like as aunt and niece. Like I would not imagine that with a real siblings, you know, it'd be like the same, it feels like the same thing.
Oh yeah.
And I treat her the same way too. You know, I don't treat her as if she's just, you know, my friend's kid. I treat her as if she's actually my family, you know?
Yeah. And she'll probably get to like elementary school and she'll be figuring it out. Like, wait a minute, whose sister is auntie? And then she'll be like, she's not my real aunt. What do you mean? Like, where does she fit in on our, she'll be doing like the family tree project at school. And she's like, where does she go?
Where's Aunt Juju? Where'd she go? Well, she's not really there.
Tree, and then they combine the branches.
It's like one of those leaves that fell from another tree, like, and it's now stuck on your tree.
That was awesome. I always thought that doing, because we did family tree projects in with my elementary students too, and they always said that too, like, well, where does so and so, like, what, this is my stepmom, but she also has her kids. I was like, family trees are so, because we use like a templated one. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I think there are very few families that fit the templated family tree anymore.
Yeah. Like being a teacher, I hear kids saying, my cousin is in third grade. And I'm like, is it really your cousin?
I know.
My parents are friends and they have a kid and they call each other cousins.
Right.
Like, okay. That's what you want to call them? Like, call them that. That's fine.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Okay, I want to talk about your kiddos, your kindergarten kiddos.
My littles.
Your little baby.
I call them. I call them my littles. They're my little rascals, my little munchkins, my little ladybugs. So I just call them my littles. They're
so sweet.
Yeah.
So what do you, I know we were talking about like the great perspective you have being around these children and not being their parents, because when I was saying, when you're the parent, sometimes you're in that like survival mode. You just like making it through your day. You don't, you don't have time to like step back and say like, okay, what's working for my child or what does my child need? And you also as a parent have all of these, like you have your own stuff, right? That you're kind of putting onto your child or mirroring to them. So you have the really cool perspective of being around these kids and getting that like view of kind of where they come from and how they interact. And I just wondered from your perspective, what you see parents are doing really well. Like what are some things that children really love that their parents do for them? And then what are some things you feel like parents do because they think it's important, but it's not really necessary? Very big question.
Yeah. So like seeing, so being a kindergarten teacher, so they're 5 and 6 or they're 5 turning 6 when they come in. So they either come in out of preschool for a year. They've maybe been in it for 2 or 3 years. Maybe they were in daycare. Some kids did not even have experience beforehand, you know. They all come in at so many different levels. It's like hard to give like one thing that all the kids do great in besides, I mean, one thing that they're all really good at is talking. That's for sure. I mean, every time I start the year off, like they're pretty shy. And then once they open up, they're just like, yeah, this happened at home. Blah, blah, blah. My dad did this. We got a new boat. This and that. Like they just want to talk. But I think like, for a majority of my kids, it's them being able to open up. Mm. That has been such a cool thing to see kids do with me. When they come in, I ask them what their favorite color is or what they like to do at home, you know, what's your favorite thing to do with mom or dad? They're able to open up and express it. Mm-hmm. Some kids have a really hard time telling what they want because they've always been told by their parents what to say.
Mm.
You know, like we've had situations where I ask the kid a question and they just look up at their mom.
Yeah.
And they wait for their answer. But I'm like, you have your brain.
Yeah.
You have something to think of, like think with. You need to learn how to use it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like the answer for both. I don't know, like
yeah.
Those questions. I mean, I'll have some kids, if I'll just tell them, ask them, what'd they do this weekend? They will make a list of 20 things and they will go into detail that they went to the park with this person. They played this game and they had this food. Like they're so good at it. And I love hearing it, but then there's some where it's like, what'd you do? And they just go, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you do anything with your parents? I don't know. Like they just don't really know how to talk.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know how to react to a question. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if a kid's asking them to play with them, some kids know how to say yes. Some kids know how to say, I don't really want to right now. Mm-hmm. And some just think that if they don't get asked to play, they're being antagonized or bullied. Mm-hmm. Because no one wants to play with them.
Yeah.
But they don't, those kids don't also know how to ask, can I play with you?
Yeah.
They don't know how to open up and express themselves and just say, this is what I want. They're so used to their parents saying, this is what you want.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I know that we're talking about children, but I'm like, this is everyone. This is adults. And it's like, you kind of go through the stages of life. Like you go through high school and you do like standard 4-year college. Maybe you do a little more schooling, whatever it is, you get your job. But I think that's a thing too with adults is like you ask them what they want and then you are almost getting that canned answer. And And I find myself doing that too, is like, I mean, even having a baby, it was like, okay, well now the next logical thing would be to have another baby. And we had to sit down and be like, okay, yes, that makes sense. But is this what we really want?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I felt like as you were talking, my brain was going wild. But also that about like asking somebody else to play, I think is something that still comes into play for adults too, is like we feel left out of things. We feel like everybody is hanging out without us, or everyone's doing cool things without us. And it's really about, I mean, I felt that way definitely like in high school and even in college. I was like, everyone is making friends here. I don't know what to do, so I'll just like kind of keep to myself. And then got out of college and realized like, oh, if I reach out to other people reach out to me.
Yeah.
And that's like the same with kids, is they're kind of just like, okay, well, I guess nobody wants me. And when every single person is thinking that, then there's no communication happening, because we're all just like, well, I guess I'll just be by myself. And
yeah, they just end up, you know, figuring things out by themselves. But like, I had like some kids would come up to me at recess and they'd just be like, Mrs. Weiss, I have no one to play with.
Yeah.
I'm like, you don't? There's 39 kids out here. Our class and another class. Did you ask all 39 kids if you could play with them? And they just look at me, just kind of like dumbfounded. I'm like, go ask.
Yeah.
Do you see that little boy over there playing by himself? Ask him to play with you.
Yeah.
You know? But then like some kids, you know, they just go, I don't want to ask him. I'm like, that's your own fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, don't be that child who's just going to like pick and choose who they want to play with when you're saying you don't want to play or you have no one to play with.
Yeah.
Because then you're really not going to have anyone to play with. You need to be able to open up and like express yourself and just say, I want to play with someone. I want to play Star Wars. I want to play, you know, school outside. Just be open and tell them, you know, like even like as you said with adults, like when I was a kid, I used to love being around people, but if no one asked me, I would get nervous and just say, you know, like, I remember sitting on a rock at my elementary school singing a song that I made up to myself that no one wants to play with me. I specifically remember this rock being there and me just singing the song. I used to sing it to myself in my house, you know, just like, you know, when we throw back to memories when we were younger. But I would do that. And then now and as an adult, you know, there's times where some of my closest friends meet and they don't ask me to go with them. And I don't care anymore. I'm like, if you guys want to go hang out, I don't have to be at every occasion that we have. You know, if you want to go get ice cream with someone else, who stinking cares? I can go get ice cream with someone else. Like you said, like I can go ask another friend.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the same thing. You know, but just to know that you don't always need to be invited everywhere. You have the choice to also invite people into your life.
Yeah.
Just because they're not asking you does not mean that you're loved. It does not mean that you're, you know, something that you're ignored.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sometimes people just want to be alone.
Yeah.
Sometimes kids at recess just want to be alone. I'll ask them, is everything okay? Yeah. Okay. Do you want to play with anybody? Not really. I just want to play by myself. Okay.
Yeah.
Go at it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's your choice and that's what you're happy with. Go freaking do it.
I think there's that like vulnerability for kids and for adults too. And when you go into school as a child, because I taught first grade, so not so much older. Basically, you handed them off to me, not the same kids. But it's like with the kids, they felt like if they were a little bit shy and they asked someone to play and that person said no, even if it was because they wanted to be alone, it just hits your ego. Even as a little kid, you're just like, oh, well, okay. And then that first thought is, well, they don't like me. They don't want to play with me. They don't like me. And I think with adults too, it's like, well, I don't want to reach out to this person and see if they want to get coffee because they might not want to, right? It's like super basic, but it just kind of stings.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there's so many people that I have like come across in unconventional ways, whether I've like volunteered with them or met them through friends of friends. And it's people that I've kind of known of and never approached, never really thought I had anything in common with. And then when you get down into who a person actually is, it's like we all could find common ground.
Yeah.
With anyone, really.
Yeah. And like with like even like you being as like, I'm not a parent, but you being as a parent or me being as a teacher, mm-hmm. also showing the kids and being examples of if someone asks you something, you want to say no, or if you ask them something and they say no,
yeah,
it's okay. Yeah. You know, like kids are, I always call them like my little sponges too. They literally soak up everything you say, that you do. You know, I always said, one time I just said, like cuckoo crazy. Like I said that I'm cuckoo crazy if I don't drink enough coffee.
Yeah.
And cause sometimes I like lose my page in a book. I would just go at it and they would call me that after. And I don't get offended by it because I'm like, I'm the one who showed you that. Mm-hmm. I can't get upset if you call me that because that's just a friendly way of me saying I lost my mind, you know, like I lost my marbles or whatever it is. Yeah. And, you know, like they say things that I say all the time. Like there's sayings that I say that I, like when we were back in the classroom, I would just hear them mimic me. Mm-hmm. Or how I would tell a child to calm down, they would tell a different child when I'm working with a group to do the same thing the way how I just did.
Yeah.
You know, so I remember like there was a time where I think we were at recess and the teacher asked me or asked teacher something and they just said like no to whatever it was. And the child was like, why did that teacher say no? I'm like, because they needed to. They didn't need to say yes, you know. I don't need to hear yes all the time.
Yeah.
Compared to the kids when they're always like, I want to do this. And I say no. They're like, but all I hear at home is yes. So that's what they're used to. And that's how they're like soaking in that is that what they hear from home. And like my perspective is I'm trying to get them to hear what they hear at school and try to bring that home to change that mindset too.
Yeah.
You know, so many kids always like, for example, they'll just say, I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. I'm not smart enough. I'm dumb. And I'm like, where do you hear that? Mm-hmm. Because I've never said any of those words to you. You know, we had four classroom promises instead of rules in our classroom and I made them all sign it. It was the first ones, make safe choices, be kind to others, try your hardest and tell the truth. Mm-hmm. So with the try your hardest, I tell them in the beginning of the year, like you can do anything you put your mind to. Do not let someone tell you that you can't do something. Mm-hmm. If you say you can't, we're going to refer back to our promises because that's not allowed in here.
Mm-hmm.
It is never I can't. It is that I can't yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just shifting their brains, like even telling the parents, like, I really want you guys to stop telling your kids that they can't do something because they're believing it in themselves because that's what they're hearing.
Yeah.
You know, or I've had a kid say that they're stupid. Where did they get that from to be able to say that about themselves and then feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think with siblings too, that I've noticed when you have siblings or you're growing up, I mean, I could even see it like with a lot of cousins, if you're just growing up the same age and the same family, it what tends to happen is you just start to compare. Where like in my family, it's like my brother is the musical one. Now I'm not the musical one at all by any means, but like my sisters have both played music growing up as well, but it's like because they didn't play at a level or have the passion that my brother did, it almost felt like his like musical gifts were not more supported, but nurtured more, I would say, or that kind of became his identity more. And I think even the intelligence thing, like you have siblings, it ends up where one or two of the kids in the family are just better at school, or they don't have to study and they still get good grades, right? And then one has to work hard for their good grades, and then one doesn't care about school. And it's like, just seems like everybody falls into these ranks because of that comparison. And I noticed that with students too, is if they're like sitting next to a child, I mean, because kids, how long does it take them? Not long to figure out like who the smart kids in class are. I'm doing air quotes. Like I have to, smart kids and the dumb kids. No, but, right? But I mean, if you asked, I feel like most of my students, even in first grade, because also that's when like some of them know how to read, it's a big reading year, but they could tell you like, okay, no, those are the smart kids. And it's like, well, I know I've never outright said that. So where are they getting all of these cues and ideas? And then, yeah, it's like, then it becomes permanent to them. It becomes factual to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard enough as a grown woman, almost 30 years old, to convince myself sometimes that like, no, you are competent in this thing. You know, I've got to like say my affirmations and meditate on it and like have my husband tell it to me over and over. So a 6-year-old, it's like to them, they hear it once and they're like, well, that seems true because a grown-up told me, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Like we had a mayor in our classroom. And he wasn't technically the smartest one, but he was the one who was like the leader. Yeah. But whenever we, like, it's ultimately the class's decision, even at 5, you know, I give them the options to pick whoever. It's mostly like a popularity contest at this point because it's like in the first 4 weeks of school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's whoever, you know, is the nicest person, whoever talks a lot. But at the same time, like, because they're so young, that person who's the mayor is not always doing the right thing, even though that's what the mayor is chosen to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even for them to see that, oh, the person who's the mayor is making not safe choices.
Yeah.
Or they didn't tell the truth this time. I always refer back to like that you are allowed to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
These are okay to make. You just need to own up to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like how you said, like with like you just need to learn how to own up to like who you are.
Yeah.
And not let anyone else tell you otherwise. You know, like there's this book that I read to them. It's really good for kids called The Girl Who Never Made Mistakes. And it's this girl who goes, it's the book all about how she never spills anything. She never does anything wrong. She's at her talent show and she's doing her talent. And then something wrong happens and then everything just goes bad.
Yeah.
And she was like known as this girl in the newspaper and everyone came to come see her. And it just was like ruined when all like, the press was there and all the parents were there and teachers and, you know, and she just like stood there and then she just started laughing. And she was just like, I've never made a mistake before, you know, but I'm going to own up to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's going to tear her down at the end. She's just like, this is me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm able to make mistakes and I'm able to mess up sometimes, but I'm gonna own up to what I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and same with adults, like sometimes we always think that we can't do something because someone else told us that we can't.
Mm-hmm.
Or that we are something because someone told us that we are. Like when I was younger, when my dad would tell me like you're a bigger girl, mm-hmm. when I was younger, I'd believe him. I think that I wasn't gonna get married. Because that's just someone who I looked up to and I thought was telling me what was best for me because it was an adult.
Yeah.
But when we get older, we realize like some people also don't know what they're saying when they tell you it either. You know, so we need to figure out for ourselves that I am able to run my business. I am able to get my daughter to read. I'm able to, you know, get my master's or whatever it is, something as simple as that. Just to know that you're able to go through whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of times when we are adults working with kids or parenting children, then we do get like just associate adjectives with them even unintentionally. And a lot of times I catch myself doing it with my husband around our son, because I mean my daughter's too young, so we're like say everything we want right now before she starts soaking it in and understanding. But with my son, I mean we'll even just say things like, oh, he's so strong, and that's a positive one, or another example would be like, oh, you know, it's okay. He's just really sensitive today and stuff like that. But, and it's just a way to describe, but those things do, I say sensitive because that's one that I feel like I grew up just thinking like that I'm really sensitive and fragile. Like my emotions are very much that way. And then what happens is then you become like, well, no, I'm not. I'm going to stonewall and I'm not going to tell anyone that I'm upset and I'm fine all the time. And I think even adults, like they have trouble sometimes, or they, the others, not us, obviously, but as adults, we have trouble just like accepting our humanness. Mm-hmm. And
oh, sorry, my phone just went off. Oh my gosh.
Oh, it's okay. But yeah, and then like you said, it's not so much teaching kids, it's modeling for them. So all the times that we're not allowing ourselves to make the mistakes or to try new things, it's just teaching them like, okay, well, she seems to be fitting herself in this tiny little box. Just got to find my little box and make sure I stay inside. And yeah, I just started, and I like just posted about it before we got on this call, a new book called Untamed. Ooh. By Glennon Doyle. And okay, I've only read like the first 10 pages, but I read the first page, actually. I was like, everyone has to read this. This is amazing. Because I'm thinking, again, 10 pages in, but I'm thinking the concept of the whole book is basically how we are kind of boxed in at all these different directions until we come up with the personality of who we are. And it's like our, you know, spirituality is sort of decided for us and all of our worldviews are decided for us just in nurturing. And then she kind of one day was just like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. And then when she went back to like basically put her life back together, it ended up so different from the default.
Yeah.
Can you hear my son wailing?
Yes.
Okay, he's downstairs. I'm like, we'll give this a second because he seems really mad at my husband for some reason.
Oh, God. Who could be mad at Drew? I mean, Drew's the most calmest person I've ever seen.
I know.
It's just so like, hey, how are you doing? I don't know how calm he is. I remember at your house.
He's
calm, cool, collected. I'm like, nope, sorry.
Yeah, I tell him all the time he's very steady.
Which he, word.
Yeah, he's always just been very, he's funny because when he gets upset or like worked up about something, he'll come home from work and had like a rough day or like a confrontation with someone on his team that he's managing. And then he'll come in and I'm like, I'm kind of excited because I'm like, ooh, he's mad. This is fun. And it takes him like 30 seconds. Like he tells me what happened. He's like, you know what? I'm over it. What do you want for dinner? I'm like, well, that was fun.
Like, what? When Alex comes home, I'm like, he likes to leave work at home or work at work. So like, he'd rather come home and he'll tell me like a little bit, but he's like, I really don't want to talk about it. Like, I'm just but he's not like, he is over it, but he's still pissed about it, but he doesn't want to talk about it just because he'd rather talk about something else.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, but come on, I want to know. I have no drama going on right now. Like, I have nothing. I have me and the dogs.
I know, I tend to like feel badly about myself too, because if I get worked up with both, like I have both kids home. So I feel like if I get really worked up about it and then Drew comes home and he calmly helps me get everybody situated. And I'm like, man, I need to figure out how to like do this. And then one day he told me, he's like, oh, I've screamed into a pillow before while I've been with both kids. I'm like, oh, you have? Like, oh my gosh, that's so hot. I was like, because I know. I was like, wait, you like got frustrated enough to have to release some anger while you were with the babies? And which I'm like, I do all the time. I'll like have a good cry in the kitchen while they're having lunch. I'm like, okay, we've regrouped. We're ready to go again.
I know you need that time just to like Yeah, just get all your frustration out. I mean, that happened to me at school.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we'd have our schedule worked out as that we'd have everything in the morning, lunch, math, and we had specials. So sometimes, you know, during lunchtime when I have my lunch duty, we don't eat because we're open. Like, that's one thing that kids need to work on, opening their lunches. Back to that question earlier. They
parents
learn how to be independent, opening up a Capri Sun. They're Lunchable. They're Tupperware. Because all I do is this. Open, rip, slide, unlock, zip up Ziplocs, unopen Ziplocs, put them back together, teach them how to put their straw in the thing, how to open their milk. I'm like, I don't eat.
You know what would be fun is like a teacher. It could be like a teacher parent. Nah, teacher's fun. Like a teacher Olympics or like a minute to win it, where it's all of those. It's like shoe tying with a fidgety kid and opening lunches. And I don't know, what else do you have to do?
I would win.
I believe you.
I'm so good at that. That's all I do. Like, I just say, screw lunch. I'll wait until specials to eat it whenever the kids are gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just no time. By the time we get in there, the kids have to go to the bathroom half the time. Half the kids are buying their lunch. You have to go to the bathroom. We only have 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And I end up only getting, like, 10 if I want to eat.
Yeah.
You know, but like, during that specials time, if something happened in the daytime, I would just lose it at my desk. I would, like, put on some music. I would, like, get another cup of coffee, or I'd find some kind of Coke Zero, whatever I needed at that point in time, and I would just let it out if I had to. I would just like get frustrated and just kind of like lay my head on my desk and just be like, what am I doing? Like, what just happened? How did this child just punch this child because they took their Cheeto? You know, how did I miss that? How did that, you know, what in the world could have happened to make that?
It's so funny. Have you ever had to record yourself teaching for any reason, like to watch it back or?
Not since I've started teaching. Back in college when I was doing my internships, I had to.
Yeah, I had to do the same, but then I was teaching a lesson to like present as this, I was like doing this new program. So I was presenting this video. So I didn't tell the kids they're being recorded because then, of course, they're just going to be like making faces.
Yeah.
But I set it up right before lunch. We did the whole lesson. I was like, that was amazing. The kids were so well behaved. You know, I'm scanning the room. Everything's good. And then I watch it back and there's like so many things happening that you just can't, because there's 20 children, right? And their little bodies under their desk. I was like, what is going on? Like, two kids had a full on like argument that I didn't even notice, because it's like that whisper, like, stop touching me, stop, you stop, you stop. And yeah, I was like, they're so sneaky.
They are. They're so sneaky. And I remember like whenever having observations, where you would plan, oh my gosh, we skipped on that this year because of this whole thing. Our observations were the week that school was canceled.
Okay.
The first week. So missed out on that. But I just remember, like, I would tell them, all right, remember your peanut butter and jelly partner? That's who you're working with. Go find your peanut butter and jelly partner. Oh. Not your cookies and cream one. Your peanut, because I had them, like, in different groups. I had, like, nachos and cheese, cookies and cream, peanut butter and jelly, and like ketchup and mustard. So like they knew kind of who to go to. And like, of course you would pair them like highs and lows, or, you know, medium, low, and high. So I'm like, all right, find your peanut butter and jelly. So they find them. And I said, I'm like, all right, this is where you're going to be when our principal walks in, because this is who you're talking to, you know, to get them all set up. And then you talk to them about what you're going to teach, you know, remember, this is what you're going to talk about. What are we going to talk about? Okay, that's right. Then he comes in, we start the lesson, I come in and talk about, this is why he just pinched me. I'm like, oh dear Lord, bless, why are we even touching each other?
Yeah.
When you sit on the carpet, we try not to touch bodies because then you're in someone else's way. And I'm like, God bless America. What did I do to mess. Such a mess. I love them anyways.
Yeah, it always felt weird to me. Like, sometimes I would just take a mental step back and I'd be like, am I okay, like, being in charge of this many kids at once? I'm pretty sure they could overtake me, even the little ones, if they wanted. Like, if they gang up, they could definitely just all leave.
Yeah. I think the one thing, like, with teaching that, I mean, this is what parents have told me. They, like, today I got my teeth cleaned, and the dental hygienist, I had her daughter last year, and I've known her since her daughter was, like, two.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's just like, I feel, she said, this are her words, I feel like us parents and kids are spoiled when we have you and then we go to the next grade.
Oh.
Because there's not another teacher that has the same love and compassion, but yet the rigor and, you know, not sternness, but just like the
high expectations.
That you have for the kids.
Yeah.
But it's not in a way where they think that they can't do what you're asking either. You know, like, I think when we changed from classroom rules to classroom expectations to mine is classroom promises, I feel like their brain shifts to that this is something that I can actually do. It's not something that I have to do to make my teacher proud of me, but something to make myself proud and happy.
And it's like participation in their little school community rather than just following your rules and you're the boss. And high expectations is amazing for kids because we sometimes think that, like, giving them something that's a little above what they would think is their skill level, whatever it is, we would think, like, oh, they'll be defeated, right? But really, it's showing them, like, I trust you to figure this out. And when we step in, it's like, oh, let me just tie your shoe. Let me just, you know, then that is telling them, like, yeah, I can't do it. Mom has to help me.
There's so many, like, I've had so many kids like that where they, like, the beginning of the year, the parents can only bring them in for the first 2 weeks, and then they have to come in by themselves.
Yeah.
So many parents are like, but will they know where to go? Do they know where your classroom is? How do they know how to get in? Do they know how to knock? I'm like, how do they not know how to knock?
Yeah.
Did you know how to, like, you know, have you not watched Frozen where Anna knocks on the door?
Yeah.
That's a knock, you know? But they just, like, I love parents who are so involved with their kids, but there's also times where they need to learn how to be involved to where they can do it on their own and they can be independent. Like, some kids come in and their parents, like, take out everything for them, their lunchbox, their agenda, their jacket, go put this here. And I'm always like, they can do it.
Yeah.
They can come in with their backpack. And when that door is closed, it's their job to learn where all this stuff goes.
Right.
Because it will become a routine that every day, this is what they're used to. They know when they come in, they give me a high five, a fist bump, or a hug. And then they go to their seat. And they know to take out that agenda, that lunchbox, put the backpack away, put the jacket in their seat pocket if they want it. Like, they learn that with practice, but you also have to let them go to practice it.
Yeah.
Same with, like, tying shoes. Parents would say, I just don't have the time to teach them to tie their shoes. You know, I'm going to let them wear Velcro shoes. But then 30 minutes of my day is tying shoes.
Yeah.
You know, so when the kids, like, learn how to tie their shoes, I make, like, a huge deal out of it because then I call them the master shoe tire. And I say, you are a master shoe tire. Raise your hand. Go find someone whose shoe is untied. And everyone else is like, I want to be a master shoe tire. And I say, learn how to tie your shoes. You know,
we would get in line and then the shoe tires would, like, step out of line and scan and, like, run around.
Yes. And same with, like, riding a bike, you know, like I said to the parents, like, you should try and learn something that they haven't learned yet, you know, and I said, who has learned how to ride their bike without training wheels yet? And maybe, like, two would raise their hand, like, during this quarantine, and then some kids knew beforehand, and some kids just don't know at all. And I said, you guys should try to learn before we, like, finish the school year, you know, and then some of them are like, I can't do it. Like, who told you can't do it, you know? But it's also, like, the time with the parents, but it's teaching your kids, like, they can do these things, but you have to be able to let them do it.
Yeah.
Let them fall. Let them bump their head. Let them have accidents. Let them make those mistakes. Because you're not going to learn unless you make them.
Yeah, it's hard coming from, like, I totally agree with you 100%, but I believed that my 5 years of teaching, but then I still find myself overcompensating for my son and having to, like, actually tell myself, Erica, stop it, like, stop doing this, let him do it. And yeah, it's weird because when it's not your own, it's not your own baby, you do just think like, okay, yeah, I trust you, go ahead. It's almost like the nurturing kicks in so hard with your own kid that you just are kind of used to like, oh, this is how I'll show love, is like coddling them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough. So I feel like for parents who, if they're listening to this and feel like, it, like, yes, I know, but it's so hard. Like, it is so hard. You have to work against, like, every instinct in your body to, and there's that happy medium too, right? Like, if I see my son struggling with something, we talk about, like, letting him make safe mistakes, my husband and I say. So we're like, okay, if he's in actual danger, we can just step in and, like, get him down.
But absolutely.
If, you know, he's standing on a balance beam, which we'll just talk about, like, oh, you know, look at, you're up high, this, and this. Where are your feet? You know, are your feet stepping here? You know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Rather it's definitely different if it's dangerous and that they, like, can really hurt themselves compared to, you know, but stepping on a book and acting like it's lava, like the floor is lava.
Right. But like those things. And I noticed it too when we went like out in the woods today with the kids, and I noticed because there was another family and my son was like kind of just walking along like the big roots of the trees that stick out above the ground. So it's like unsteady ground, but it's like he's 3 feet off the ground. So he's walking on that like a balance beam, and then this other child started doing it, and his mom was like, no, so come here, you know, walk where it's flat so you don't trip. And she was like navigating his whole way through the woods, and I was like, oh, first of all, like that looks really exhausting because I come to the woods so I don't have to monitor what he's doing.
Yeah, let like, them
run free.
Yeah, find a stick that you want to draw with,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But it's, but I do, I mean, I see that it, like, that is almost my first instinct, though, is like, oh, he's gonna trip, like, oh, I know it's coming, okay, I have to let it happen, like, I have to let him learn, but it still hurts your mommy heart a little bit.
No, I know, because you want to nurture them, you know, and just, you, like, I don't, like, I've, like, seeing my niece grow up, and, like, me, I always want to, like, hug her, and I always want to pick her up, and then I always, like, I don't make fun of those parents, but I just say about those parents who like still pick up their child, you know, and hold them. I'm like,
yeah,
six, what are you doing? Like, you know what? Some of them, that's their last baby. Some of that's their only baby.
Yeah.
You know? So if that's how you want to greet your child or when they come outside, I've just like, that was my mindset like in the very beginning, but now I'm just like, have at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's your pride and joy. And if that's how you want to hold them, if that's how you want to see them, then do whatever you want, you know, love on them, hold their hand, you know, like pick them up on your side, you know, have them on your back, whatever it is, you know. But then like when I still like with Ainsley, like I pick her up and I hold her and she's always like, Auntie, you put me down. I'm like, I just want you. Like, I just want you to love me. I just want you, like, this is the time that I just want to be wrapped around you. You know, I do it to my dog. I always want to pick her up and hold her. And she's just like, I don't want to be around you right now. But that's always how I was when I was a kid too. I always wanted to be picked up. I always wanted to be held.
Aww.
And as like seeing the parents do that with their kids, that's fine. I'm totally for that. It's just like with the independency of like going into school, some parents would just, you know, tuck their shirt in when they first walked in the door. How do you learn how to do that? Because I'm not allowed as a professional to touch your child and push their shirt in. When I say it's time to line up, tuck your shirts in, and they don't know how, I have to stand there and wait for them to do it. But then they get aggravated because it's in their underwear and they're moving around as if there's worms. And I'm like, this is what your parent needs to teach you at home. They didn't teach you how to move your shorts out but keep your underwear next to you, you know, and like just tuck it in. just do the tuck. Oh my gosh, I had one who had like really bad problems with like touchy, and like if something was just crinkled the wrong way, she would start bawling her eyes out just because it just didn't feel right. Yeah. And I asked her, did you learn how to do this at home? No. I'm like, okay, I'm going to teach you, but you're going to have to touch yourself. You're going to have to touch your shirt because I can't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I know. It's hard. I don't know what the... There's so many darn things to teach kids too. Because we're like, okay, he transferred to his toddler bed a few months ago. Check. And that was actually really easy. And then now we're like in the midst of potty training. I'm like, and then also he's been snagging his sister's pacifiers again. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, there's so many things. And then, yeah, I feel like as soon as those are done, it's like time to ride a bike. I don't know. I don't know when, but.
And it's also like, well, just whatever the parent thinks it's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, guaranteed, I'm not a parent. I'm not everyone's teacher. But you know your child more than anybody else does.
Yeah.
You know, so it's up to you and how you parent to make sure what's best and what's right for your little munchkins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not someone else's job to tell you how to run your life, how to be a mom, how to take care of your kids. You can listen to all these people, you know, but ultimately, like, if something, like in Caitlin's episode, how the breastfeeding didn't work for her, and she was just, like, saying she wanted to do it so bad because all these friends did it, and she just knew that it was good for the baby, and that didn't happen. I'm like, if you can't do it and it's not best for your kid, then you need to stop.
Right.
You know, you do what's best for you, not what's best for the other person next to you, because your life is completely different than someone else's.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. I know. Even her episode was so good because she's like such a close friend of mine, and I still didn't know that that was exactly how that all went. I was like, oh, babe. I was like, I didn't even, you know, everybody's got their stuff and you don't always know like the depth of it, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited you did this. I love it because I feel like everyone's episodes are like connected in some way or have like similar themes, even though they're a totally different story. And it's been really fun with people that I actually know. I actually have some interviews next week with people I've never even met. They just That's applied so and we've like kind of talked about what they'd talk about. And I was like, you sound awesome. Let's do it. I'm like, how's it going to be when I've never even met them?
Yeah. That's exciting though.
Yeah. But it's cool having people like from Vero, because then I know when people are listening, they're like, it's Erica and Julie. I'm like, I like both of them. I want to listen. I always say it's like eavesdropping. You're just like, I wonder what they're talking about.
Yeah. No, that's super cool. I'm happy for you.
Thank you. But I appreciate this and you telling your story, and it's also beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.